Welcome to the Medical Advantage Podcast, where you can hear healthcare professionals, expert consultants, and industry thought leaders discuss the exciting new ideas and technologies that are changing the business of healthcare. Tune in to each episode as we hear from some of the most innovative minds in medicine about the future of healthcare and how your organization can stay profitable, efficient, and on top of industry best practices.
Welcome, everyone, to the Medical Advantage podcast series. I am your host, Selena Dusso, and today we are joined by Beth Hickerson. Beth is a senior consultant here at Medical Advantage with over 15 years of experience in ambulatory healthcare. Her wealth of knowledge in healthcare quality improvement has made her an incredible resource for today's topic. Today, we will be discussing MIPS, what changes are taking place in 2021, and much more. So, Beth, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining us today. We're very excited to discuss this topic. As we get started, would you just like to introduce yourself a bit about what you do and what brings us here today?
Sure. Thanks, Selena. And thanks for having me on the podcast. I'm excited to be here. So my history, like you mentioned, is in ambulatory healthcare. I started working at medical practices about 15 years ago. I've kind of done every role there is to do in a medical practice, including practice manager before I converted into the consulting world. And over the last several years, I have helped lots of practices with all kinds of different topics, including practice transformation, patient-centered medical home. And more recently, the last few years, we've really focused on quality reporting and quality monitoring and quality improvement. So anything having to do with quality, especially as we transition into the value-based care world where clinicians' reimbursement is really so dependent on the quality of care they provide and the value they provide, that's really what myself and my team do is work with practices to make sure that they're maximizing their performance and quality programs and then therefore maximizing their reimbursement.
Beth, thank you so much. We are very excited and very fortunate to have you and all of your experience here with us today. So as we dig into our content, we alluded to this before, but a hot topic is the 2021 final MIPS ruling and starting with the change in minimum required scores to avoid negative payment adjustments. Can you speak to that increase for this year?
I can. So what you're talking about is what we call the performance threshold. So like you said, it's the minimum number of points that a clinician must reach in order to avoid being penalized. So in MIPS, if you essentially perform above the performance threshold, then you will receive some sort of incentive. And if you score below the performance threshold, then you'll receive some sort of penalty. Now, those incentive and penalties are scaled. So the farther you are below the performance threshold, the higher your penalty is. The farther you are above the performance threshold, up to 100 points, which is the top, the higher your incentive. So every year, the magic number is the performance threshold. Every clinician wants to make sure that they at least reach that in order to avoid getting any penalties. So in 2017, we started out with a performance threshold that was very low, just 3 points. That was the first year of the program. CMS wanted to make sure that providers were not afraid to participate. They didn't just bow out altogether because it seemed like too much work. So they set the bar very low. They just wanted providers to get used to actually reporting data. And every year since then, the performance threshold has gone up by about 15 points. And the reason for that is that CMS has indicated that they want to gradually and systematically increase that performance threshold up to what they anticipate that it will be in 2022. So in 2022, that's what's considered the first full implementation year of MIPS. So even though we've had several years of the program so far, they've all been considered transition years. Again, trying along that idea of getting providers used to reporting, giving them plenty of time to get used to the program and succeed in it. In 2022, CMS is required to set the performance threshold at the mean or median of a previous performance year. Well, the lowest mean or median we have from any prior performance year is a mean of 74 points from 2017. So CMS did indicate in the 2021 final rule that they anticipate setting the performance threshold for 2022 at 74 points. They have to do that. That's written into the macro legislation. So in order to continue their effort to gradually nudge up to that point, they did set the performance threshold at 60 points for 2021. So for all of our listeners out there, your magic number for 2021 is 60 points, and your magic number for 2022 will be 74 points, at least as far as we know now. There's, I suppose, potentially we could hit a lower mean or median for the 2020 performance year before then, but I think that's highly unlikely to happen. So I think that 74 number is pretty solid for 2022. But when we look at that, we look at the 60 for this year and the 74 for 2022, what we really notice is how far we've come in this program. So like I mentioned, the first year, the performance threshold was 3 points. In that same year, the exceptional performer threshold, which is the number of points that a clinician must earn in order to earn extra bonus money, was set at 70 points. So now we fast forward to our current year and next year, and what we see is that now and in 2022, clinicians will need to score even more points just to avoid a penalty than they would have had to score in the past to be considered an exceptional performer. So that really highlights how competitive this program is getting and what CMS has been working towards all this time.
That's a great point that you make, that year over year practices are really having to adjust their workflows and their focus to maintain competitiveness in their scoring and to be able to achieve that exceptional performer status. So without making some changes, it's becoming harder and harder for physicians to keep up on that high performance reporting. So along those lines, what are some other noteworthy changes for 2021 that might be impacting how clinicians are reporting?
Sure. So it's always hard to condense, it's always hundreds of pages of the final rule. So it's a little hard to condense all of that detail into a short snippet, but I'm going to break my answer down into two buckets because 2021 things really significantly changed for MIPS APM participants. There were not so many changes for regular MIPS reporters. And by regular MIPS reporters, I mean those who report as individuals or as a group or a virtual group. So I'll address those regular reporters first. And there's not a lot that really changes as far as reporting goes and how they need to report for 2021. A couple of interesting changes for 2021. One is that CMS has delayed the implementation of the MIPS Value Pathways program. So that was a program that was introduced in the 2020 final rule that CMS said would start in 2021 and has caused a lot of panic among clinicians trying to figure out how they would succeed. The MIPS Value Pathways, or MVPs, are designed to streamline reporting and to align a clinician's reporting with their specialty or scope of practice. And while theoretically it would involve them reporting fewer measures and having to report less data, there is a big change systematically in the way that they would report and what they would report to CMS. So that was a big change. CMS decided to shelve it for 2021, allow more time for development of those MVPs and more time for education for practices before they roll it out. They do anticipate starting it in 2022 or potentially 2023. So if you're a clinician out there and you've been worried about MVPs, you can know that you don't have to worry about it for 2021 and you can just report the way you normally have in the past. The other change that I think might impact the way some clinicians report is that there is a new promoting interoperability measure. It's called the bidirectional HIE, or health information exchange measure. And it's optional. And if a clinician chooses to report it, it will replace the other two previous HIE measures, which were around sending electronic summaries of care and receiving and incorporating electronic summaries of care. So this bidirectional HIE measure requires that a clinician then be interfaced with a health information exchange, which is usually organized at the state level, and that the clinician be both sending and receiving data to that health information exchange in order to promote interoperability with other providers and other facilities. And a clinician's ability to take advantage of this new optional measure will really depend on their EHR and the functionality of their EHR. I think some of the smaller EHRs will not really be able to accommodate this measure very well, and those clinicians will have to stick with the previous two HIE measures that they have been reporting the last last couple of years. But those clinicians who are using EHRs that are bigger, and especially those associated with hospital systems such as Epic or Cerner, may have an easier time with us because generally those systems are already working with their state HIEs because they're a part of the bigger hospital systems. So for those clinicians, this may be a real win for them and cut out some of the work that they've had to do in the past, because now they'll just be able to attest, yes, that they are bidirectionally interfacing with a health information exchange. Then we segue over to that other group, which is much more complicated. So those folks in a MIPS APM, there's a lot of changes surrounding APM entity reporting and reporting for APM participants. I would say summarize those changes as saying there is a great expansion of options for 2021, but I think CMS has done that as a ramp up to the restrictions that they are expected to implement in 2022, which are pretty significant and include the implementation of both the APM performance pathway and the elimination of the CMS web interface.
Absolutely. That's something we've definitely heard some buzz about, is this new APM performance pathways and the APP model being introduced. So I understand this is for MIPS APM participants only, but what has changed for 2021? What measures have been set from CMS to incentivize them?
So in the past, for APM participants, they have been pretty limited. Particular those participants in ACOs such as Medicare Shared Savings Programs or NextGen ACOs, those participants and their APM entities have been very limited in the way they can report and what they can report. So essentially, always the APM entity had to report quality measures at the APM entity level, which includes all participants within their entire entity. And they had to do it using the CMS web interface, which is a set of dedicated population health measures that had to be reported on only Medicare patients. So it was a sample of Medicare Part B patients from all of the providers within the APM entity. So that was their only choice. That was both good and bad. It certainly uncomplicated things in the sense that APMs didn't have to make any decisions about what to report. They already knew what they had to report. But there were some limitations with that also, of course, especially if you have, for instance, an APM entity that has multiple specialties in it. Sometimes those population health measures don't always apply to those APM participants in that APM entity. So the general gist for 2021 is that there are a lot more options. So the first big new option is what I mentioned before, the APP or the APM participation pathway. So this is similar to the MIPS value pathways or the MVPs that I talked about before, which is for regular MIPS reporters, but instead the APP is specifically for MIPS participants and MIPS APM entities. So the APP really, again, seeks to streamline reporting by having a fixed set of measures for each MIPS category, and those measures are focused on population health. The APP really only impacts quality reporting for the MIPS APMs. The promoting interoperability and improvement activities stay the same. But for quality, then the MIPS APMs will be reporting on 6 quality measures. And really, that's a bit of a misnomer because 3 of those measures are actual clinical quality measures in the sense that we're used to. The 4th measure is a CAPS or patient satisfaction measure. And the other 2 measures are new administrative claims measures. So the APM entity doesn't actually submit any information from that. CMS just gathers the data from claims to make those calculations. So that's a big switch from the, you know, up to 20 different measures that they have had to report in the past. The APP is available as an optional reporting method for 2021 for all APM entities except for the Medicare Shared Savings APM entities. Medicare Shared Savings folks, unfortunately, you have to do the new APP reporting method. So that's going to involve some conversation with your APM entity about exactly how that's going to work. Aside from the APP, outside of the APP, APM entities and their participants still have the ability to report using the traditional MIPS framework that they've known from the past. But they still have some new options even within that traditional framework. So now APM entities are able to report using the CMS web interface only for 2021, starting in 2022. That's going to be sunsetted, and then they will have to start reporting via either ECQMs or MIPS CQMs, which would be through registry or QCDR. So that's going to be quite a challenge for APM entities, because whereas they used to have just this one database of sample patients for Medicare Part B, now the APM entity and the participants are reporting on their entire patient population, and they're going to have to figure out how to gather that data from all of their participating groups and then collate that data and submit it to MIPS in one way or else participate or partner with their participating groups in order to have the groups individually submit that data on their own. So a lot of big changes there for the APM entities to think about. If an APM entity did decide that they wanted to report using ECQMs or MIPS CQMs for 2021, the pro there is that they get to decide then, just like all the regular MIPS reporters, which measures they actually want to report. They'll need to report on 6 clinical quality measures, but they get to choose which measures they want to report on. So that's all kind of at the APM entity level. For those of you who are clinicians within an APM entity, so you are an individual clinician or a practice group that participates in a larger entity, it's important that you know that there is a new option for you too. So in the past, any participants of an APM entity were automatically given the APM entity score for MIPS if they were considered a participant in that APM. But now, And that was regardless of whether or not the clinician themselves as an individual or the group submitted information to CMS and scored better. They were still always given the APM entity score. But now those clinicians and groups, if they decide that they electively want to report at the TIN NPI level, which would be the individual level, or the tax ID or TIN level, which is the group level, and they were to score a higher amount of points and then therefore a better payment adjustment, just through their individual practice, then CMS will then give them the higher of the scores that they achieve, whether it's through the APM entity or through their own individual or group reporting. So that's good news for those APM participants who in the past have been concerned because they felt like by lumping themselves into the APM entity that they were a little less in control of how they performed. Now they can kind of have the best of both worlds, so they can be a part of those APM entities. And at the same time, they can also kind of hedge their bets by working on MIPS at their own level to make sure that they get the score that they really want to achieve.
Thank you, Beth. It is really great to know that there's some choice in their reporting here. It truly has been quite limited in the past, so it's wonderful to have some options here, especially with the changes coming out of COVID-19. So let's switch gears just a little bit and speak to some of the ongoing guidance regarding the COVID-19 public health emergency and some potential changes in the deadlines that are available here.
Absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned this, Selena, because I think this is actually an option that a lot of clinicians don't know about, even though we've already passed 2020. So about halfway through 2020, CMS announced that they would allow for clinicians and groups to apply for the extreme and uncontrollable circumstances hardship due to COVID-19. So essentially, they kind of created this free pass, so to speak, for practices and groups. And CMS said, if you have been negatively impacted by the pandemic, and really who hasn't been, you can elect to opt out of MIPS or opt out of individual categories of MIPS for 2020. There really wasn't a lot of proof that was required. If you do apply for the hardship, then you have to provide a brief description statement about how the pandemic has affected you, but really one or two lines is plenty. And that would allow your practice to not be penalized essentially for not performing well in MIPS because you had so many other priorities in terms of taking care of your COVID patients or just keeping healthcare operations going in a time of chaos with so much change that was required for safely seeing patients as a part of the pandemic. So CMS presented this extreme and uncontrollable circumstances or EUC for COVID-19 option in 2020. Originally, the deadline for that was 12/31/2020, but then with the release of the QPP final rule for 2021, they extended the deadline for 2020 applications to February 1st of 2020. So if you are a clinician or a group out there and you're hearing about this for the first time, it's not too late for you to take advantage of this hardship for 2020. As long as you get that in by February 1st. And in order to do that, you would just log into the QPP portal using your credentials and walk through the steps from there. It's pretty easy and self-explanatory to walk through that process. Also in the QPP final rule for 2021, CMS did announce that they are going to extend that EUC for COVID-19 option into 2021. So essentially, clinicians and practices in even APM entities can elect to opt out of MIPS or out of individual MIPS categories in 2021 if they feel like they're just not able to participate fully due to hardship from the pandemic. I do want to make a note, however, that while I have somewhat encouraged any practice who really is experiencing a hardship due to the pandemic to take the hardship in 2020, I think practices should be a little more careful in 2021 because, as we talked about before, the stakes go up in 2022. You know, we're jumping up to a performance threshold of 74 points. And any practices that are kind of ignoring MIPS are not watching their performance or making sure that they're accommodating their workflows, that kind of work that normally is necessary to score well in MIPS. If they're not doing that in 2021, they're going to be behind the curve for 2022. I don't anticipate, unless something changes with the pandemic, I don't anticipate that this same EUC exception will be allowed for 2022, which will force all of these clinicians back into participating. And if they haven't been participating for a couple years, that could be really rough for them to get back on their path.
Absolutely. This is such an important thing to mention, and that, and of course, this past year has been quite a hardship for everyone and really has taken a toll on, you know, all of the practices and all of the clinicians, but also not to lose sight of those requirements that will be in place come 2022. So it's great to know that the help is there. And as things hopefully start to get a little better here for the world throughout 2021, we can slowly and safely adjust back to normal practice. So as we sort of start to tie things up here and all of the changes that are coming, do you have any other closing comments or advice for clinicians for the next few years of MIPS?
Yeah, so I'll kind of, again, try to group this out into different groups, but for MIPS APM entities, I would say that your biggest priority right now is to really start discussing your new options for reporting quality. There's a lot of options. There's a lot of variables that need to be taken into account to figure out how you're going to best succeed in 2021, but particularly in 2022, when that web interface goes away and you're forced into a new reporting submission method. So start having those conversations now. I encourage you to include your APM participants and groups in that discussion to gain their buy-in, because of course the decisions that the APM entity makes about reporting will impact then have a downflow impact on all of their participants. If you are a MIPS APM participant or clinician or group, I encourage you kind of the reverse. Start reaching out to your MIPS APM entity now to ask them what they're doing in order to prepare for the changes and how they're going to be making their decisions about how quality will be reported moving forward. It's still really new. This final rule just came out a month ago, so they may not have a lot of answers for you at this point, but keep on them. Keep being the squeaky wheel, because you don't want to be surprised towards the end of 2021 or even into 2022 and not really understanding what your requirements are as a part of the entity. And then finally, for regular reporters, those of you reporting individually as part of a group, I encourage you to take 2021 to really relook at the way that you're reporting. Look at, if you're reporting as individuals, might it be better to report as a group? If you're reporting through your EHR, and might it be better for you to report through a registry or QCDR? So when we start to work with clients on MIPS, what I often see is that practices have kind of carried over a lot of their reporting styles and methods from PQRS days. But MIPS is a very different program from PQRS, and MIPS for 2021 is a very different program than it was for MIPS for 2017. So I encourage practices not to kind of sit on their laurels and just do things the way they've always done them just because it's easier or because they haven't taken the time to strategize, because I think really thoughtfully plotting out your decisions about what to report and how to report will make the difference in being able to receive those incentives in 2022 and beyond versus being one of those clinicians who's unfortunately penalized.
Great. Thank you, Beth, so much. This has been incredibly informative and very relevant even to many of the practices that we work with today. There are a lot of changes coming and many things to consider as we start the new year. So for any of our listeners, should you have any questions or like any more information, I'd like to invite you to find us on LinkedIn or Facebook, or even our website, medicaladvantage.com, for additional updates, podcasts, blogs, or even to reach out to us directly via email at info@medicaladvantage.com. We are here to answer your questions as these changes start coming. We would like to be able to help you. So thank you for listening. Beth, thank you so much again for your time. And to our audience, we appreciate your attention. See you next time.
Thanks, Lena. Bye, everyone.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Medical Advantage Podcast, where we discuss the ideas and technologies changing healthcare and what they mean to your organization. For more information, visit us at medicaladvantage.com and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss a show.